Do you know which hatch is about to occur this year that hasn't happened in 221 years? Are you interested to know how to target one of the craziest hatches that will make national news headlines this year? Today, Dave Zielinski is here to give us the best cicada tips, including how to predict when and where to find them and how to have success when you're out on the water this year. This is the Wet Fly Swing podcast, where I show you the best places to travel to for fly fishing, how to find the best resources and tools to prepare for that big trip, and how you can give back to the fish species you love. Hey, I'm Dave, host of the Wet Fly Swing podcast. I've been fishing and fly fishing since I was a kid. I grew up around a local fly shop and have created one of the largest fly fishing podcasts in this country. I've also interviewed more of the greatest fly anglers than just about anyone in the world. Today, Dave Zielinski is back on the podcast to give his best tips on fishing the cicada hatch and how you can have success this year. You will find out why this year is so unique and understand the life history of this bug. You also discover why and how to scout for these insects and why you should be watching for birds in the trees and their actions. Plus, we're going to find out how to target these bugs in rivers, streams, and lakes. Time for some cicada madness with a sprinkle of boat building. Here we go. Dave Zielinski at Down Home Boatworks on Instagram. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well, Dave. How are you today?
Awesome. Awesome. It's great to have you back on the show. I didn't even have a chance to check back on the last episode. I know it was a while back. I'll put a link in the show notes to that. That one we did, we talked about boat building. I think we were in a boat building season at the time, and I've been getting a lot of feedback from people around the country about how they love that little series we did. So we might have to talk a little bit about that today, but I think the focus is going to be cicadas, this hatch. I want to dig in. You wrote a book about it, so we're going to talk about that. And but give us a little update since the last one. What have you been up to the last year or so?
Yeah, so since the last one, we talked about my wooden boat journey and building wooden boats and selling plans and things like that. And that was awesome. I love that series as well, Dave. So yeah. Great job with that. It was so cool to hear all the different insights from, you know, manufacturers and everything else. But since then, oh wow. I think since then a lot. I did write a book in the last couple of years, and it was released in October called Cicada Madness. Been just fishing a lot through the end of, I guess it would have been the pandemic and into the following years, and, lots of fishing and lots of experiences, and, made a couple trips around, and I was actually out your neck of the woods on the Deschutes.
Oh, wow.
in October. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
How did that Deschutes trip treat you?
It was awesome. We went in October, and it was pretty quiet. We were there like midweek and stuff, so we had the place to ourselves. Fished like above max, just two of us on our own, managed to my good friend that was with me managed a really nice wild fish. So got a couple grabs, but I didn't connect. I didn't land one.
That's it. Well, that's steelheading. You know, that's the great thing about it, right? It's like you're not guaranteed a steelhead or really any fish, to be honest with you. But I love that you did it. Is your friend from out in this neck of the woods?
No, he came with me. So Blake Doctor, he's a younger guy that crazy about spay and stuff as well. So we took our two-handers out and had a go at it. And we'll be back. It was a great time.
That's cool. Yeah, yeah. What was your first take? I just love it. This is your first time on the Deschutes?
No, not actually, no.
Oh, okay.
First time kind of doing it that way. But I've been to the area a bunch. And but my first take on steelheading there and swinging flies and skating flies and stuff, I just loved it. Loved the canyon, loved the surroundings. And, I think low crowds as a result of kind of the unfortunate kind of state of steelhead was actually, low crowds was really nice. You don't go there to expect, like you said, to go and expect to catch a bunch of fish. Go there for the whole experience, and we had a great time.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Well, let's take it back to where you are now. Maybe you can clarify for those that weren't on the last episode, where are you coming from? And then we'll get into the cicadas.
Yeah, right. So I live in Southwest Pennsylvania, just about 45 minutes east of Pittsburgh. Everybody kind of knows where Pittsburgh's at. So in that corner of the state, I've been here in Pennsylvania and parts of New York my whole life. So always been out on the East Coast near the Great Lakes and stuff. And so just making my way around and fishing local a lot. And and then, you know, a few trips a year and stuff. So
yeah, that's really cool. And so Pennsylvania, obviously we've done quite a few episodes around that area and around that region, but what is it about? I want to talk cicadas today, and maybe just, it seems like it's this magical, you know, kind of, I don't know, thing that goes on. Maybe talk about your book. Let's hear the title of your book and describe why you decided to write a book about it.
Yeah, that's great. It's called Cicada Madness, and the subtitle is Timing, Fishing Techniques, and Patterns for Cracking the Code of Epic Cicada Emergences. And I have been chasing cicadas around for almost 30 years. So cicadas are a terrestrial insect, and you know where I live is kind of why I've chased them around is in the eastern half of the United States. We have what's known as periodical cicadas, and periodical cicadas emerge on have a synchronized emergence. So synchronized meaning all the bugs emerge at once. It's almost like your mayfly hatches, right? Time of year is right, and you know the population of bugs, the water temperature is right, and they emerge. And you know the reason why there's so many is because the predators can't get them all. But on the eastern half of the United States, we have these known as periodical cicadas that emerge on a 13-year or 17-year cadence. So they're predictable, and in their year of emergence, you can go and find them. And then they're absent for more than a decade. So you age in between there and you think about it all the time. But what's interesting about periodical cicadas is there's different age classes, which these bugs are all the same few species of Magis cicada. And there are these broods, which are the divisions of the age classes. So broods are split up by years. So in why this year is very significant, and kind of back to why I wrote a book on this, is we're in a kind of a block of time where we have consecutive emergences over the next few years, and then maybe 1 year off, and then emergences again. So been waiting for this a long time, and chasing these things around, but that uniqueness, and I've said it twice already, but it's on the eastern half of the United States. It doesn't happen anywhere else.
Oh, it
doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. Yeah.
Wow. And why is that? And what is describe eastern half of the United States? Then also why is it that it only happens here?
Yeah. So it's about from like the Mississippi eastward.
Okay.
And there's lots of theories and scientists are always studying this as to why is it only here, and it's a bit of evolution. It's these life cycles of these bugs have gotten longer over billions of years, and then climatic events, whether it was massive forest fires or glacial shifts or plate shifts in the earth, moved these bugs around, and then they created kind of their own brood distribution populations. So no one's really entirely certain, but they're all related. So they all started somewhere and then got moved around by Earth events. And then they've kind of disrupted from, you know, when they actually emerged, creating these weird synchronized events all through history. And these have been studied since late 16s or, late 1700s.
Yeah.
When the United States was kind of first colonized, people took note of these things, started keeping records, and then, you know, science kind of follows it along. And the science we have today is great. It's they're learning more and more every day.
Wow, I gotcha. And your book takes a little deeper dive too into more of the kind of the evolution, the ecology, all that of the bugs.
Yeah, for sure. So the terrestrial insect, right? So yeah, my book goes through the whole thing from, you know, birth to death of these bugs, and maybe and touches on theories of why they're the way they are. But it's a crazy thing for someone who fishes. Because imagine this bug, and if you've, you know, ever fished a stonefly hatch, you know, giant bug. So these bugs are 1.5 inches to almost 2 inches long with the wings. Giant piece of food. Everything is upside down in the ecosystem when these things happen, because there's billions of bugs. And if you happen to catch it where these bugs emerge and by accident end up in the water, every fish in the river pays attention, and eventually enough bugs happen on the water by accident that fish start eating them, and they key on them, and they actually start to hunt them, and it can be really phenomenal fishing.
Wow. Oh, this is cool. Okay, so we're narrowing down. We'll have your book as a resource. We'll have a link in the show notes to that for people that want to go a deep dive into some of the stuff we don't cover. But let's get into, you know, this year. We'll talk about it. So we're where we are now. It's kind of February going into March here soon. When is this hatch potentially going to happen?
Yeah, so what's cool about it, it's you know, again, eastern half of the United States from north to south. So about as far north as it goes is like the bottom of Wisconsin, and the far south it'll go is like the coastal plain. So Alabama, Louisiana, you know, there'll be bugs in those areas when there's an emergence in those areas. So it's all related to, and I go pretty deep in this on the emergence stuff, but it all depends on like the year of emergence. Like if it's a 13-year cicada, it's going to happen in the spring of that 13th year. It will absolutely happen somewhere. Now, the fun is where, right? And where near water? These broods have been studied, like I said, over hundreds of years. And it's pretty geographically contained where you can go to resources online and scientific journals and things like that and find, you know, a generalized area where, hey, there's going to be bugs here. And then your job is, as an angler, is to find, well, there's a nice river right there, or there's a big reservoir right there, and, you know, let's go at the right time. So back to kind of answering your question of when and where is maybe a loaded question of why is this year significant? And then, you know, kind of going back to the book stuff and how this came about. 2024 is a pretty important year for two broods. There's a 13-year and a 17-year brood that is co-emerging in 2024.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is, if you do the math, which you take 13 times 17, and this is 221, this is something that only occurs every 221 years.
Huh.
Yeah. Huh. And it's just those two broods. So, so in 2024, there is going to be, it's somewhere between 17 and 20 states will experience cicadas somewhere.
Right.
Which is pretty incredible.
So it's going to be big. And maybe go back on the brood again. Let's talk. I'm thinking the 17 year, 13 year. So describe that again. Give us the brood background. How does that work? Is this like one insect hatches back 17 years, then there's these multiple brood years within over the next 17? Yeah. Describe that a little bit.
Yeah. So for example, so 2024 here, brood, and the broods are numbered by Roman numerals. So brood X, III, or brood 13.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 17-year periodical cicada. So every 17 years, this will emerge. The last time it happened was 2007, and it will be happening in 2024.
Okay.
And time of year, well, it'll be May. You can't go wrong with May.
Yep.
and it's some if you're southern, late April maybe it starts and it hangs around through May. And then if you're a little bit north or more north, it's going to hang on into June. These bugs at the end of their life only live 4 to 6 weeks. So it's just like kind of our aquatic insects. If you think of mayflies, they don't live forever. And then you have this 13-year cicada, which is brood XIX. Okay, so brood 19, 13-year occurring. The last time it happened was 2011, and it'll again happen in 2024. There are multiple opportunities for periodical cicadas. I mentioned that there are 13-year occurring and 17-year occurring. There are currently three broods of 13-year periodical. So we have, and we have 12 17-year different broods, which means there's 15 years of cicadas, right? And understanding where these bugs are, where they occur, and when their last emergence was, will determine, just add 13 to it, that's when your next one is. If it's a 17 year, add 17 to it, that's when your next one is. So this year, 2024, is an odd one because we have two different broods, a 13 and a 17, happening at once. Now, They're going to happen in their own areas, but there is a little bit of overlap somewhere around Springfield, Illinois.
Okay.
But that doesn't necessarily mean anything to an angler. It just means what this year means is you're never going to have these two again in your lifetime,
Yeah.
and you're going to have a, almost 20 state opportunity to go find these bugs somewhere.
Cool. So it's gonna be big. And so like you said, the 17 years, one was in 2007, 2000. So in 2007, basically this bug was out, was mating, doing its thing in 2007. Then those bugs, its progeny, went into basically into whatever they do for 17 years, and then 17 years, and then they're hatching out this year, 17 years later.
So that you hit it on the head there, Dave. So it's just a life cycle, right? So if you start with what happens at the adulthood stage, right? Their whole purpose is mate, lay eggs, carry on the next generation, and die. And those eggs are laid in trees, in branches. And those eggs quickly turn into larvae, and those larvae make their way to the ground, and those larvae go into the soil, and they go about 1 meter, 3 feet deep, and they hang around tree roots. The cicada itself is what's called a true bug, and a true bug is characterized by having sort of a beak or a straw that it drinks from plants, and that's what they do. So those larvae turn into basically nymphs. And they pierce tree roots to drink the sap from trees. And
Wow.
that's where they get their food source. Their only food source is that. And just like other insects or bugs with an exoskeleton, they have to shed their skin to grow to the next size. So for 13 years or 17 years, whatever the bug is, it's underground, just growing. And it is shedding its skin, growing into the next size, and doing its thing,
Wow.
and then they get this trigger to emerge in their year of emergence, which is that 13th or 17th year, when the ground soil reaches a specific temperature. And what scientists have found is about 8 inches deep, 64 degrees. So what that means is, and that's why it's time of year, right? It's just like our mayfly hatches in a river, but these are terrestrial. Ground temperature, you get the days are getting longer, the sunshine, is warming the soil. As you approach that early summer, we hit that temperature and that triggers this mass emergence. And it really does. It happens over just a course of a few days.
Trout Routes is the most comprehensive mapping app for trout anglers. With over 50,000 trout streams, 350,000 access points, public land maps, and more, Trout Routes is the number one resource for navigating, researching, and exploring trout streams. You can download Trout Routes for free in the App Store today. Just search for Trout Routes on your phone and take your exploration to the next level. That's Trout Routes, TROUTROUTES. Are you ready to elevate your fly fishing adventures but unsure where to start? Look no further than Guidebook, the premier platform for connecting you with the finest fly fishing guides in the country. Make your way to wetflyswing.com/guidebook and start planning your next unforgettable fly fishing journey right now. Let's transform your passion into extraordinary experiences with the guidance of Guidebook.
So this is going to be a big year, lots of bugs. Let's take it into, again, let's just say you're on the water. Let's go down this route a little bit. So you kind of think you're in the right area when this thing's going to happen. Describe what it's like to be there when this thing hatches off.
Yeah, I mean, and you can go in some of the archives of my Instagram
Yeah.
and listen, but that's the thing. So you cannot, it's unmistakable the noise. So the males of the species, the adult males, make noise. They possess a piece of anatomy called a timbal, and this timbal is like a muscle. They flex it, and their hollow abdomens amplify this sound. But they sing to attract a mate. And when they sing, they're all singing. So you can imagine, in the treetops, thousands of these male bugs making this noise. It's crazy when I go back to my phone and look at video and I, you know, turn the volume on and I just get chills down my spine. Like, there it is. There's that sound. Wow. And it's just this roar of bugs. So that's one way you know you're in the right spot, right? Is you're experiencing, you know, the sound. The other part of it is, you know, bugs are cold-blooded, right? So they need ambient temperature to be able to move and to sing even. And the other thing you experience is this stuff happens when it's hot. And so you're out there in the heat and it's middle of the day when these bugs are most active. So you hear the screaming, it's hot, you're on the water. It's just great.
It's like the jungle. Probably even more.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
Well, what's it? Yeah, what, I mean, can you describe that? Like the sound? Can you do an imitation, or what does it sound like? Just a rough.
Yeah. At a when you're close to it, it's like a chatter.
Yeah.
But when there's a bunch of bugs in congregation singing as a chorus, thousands of bugs, you hear it from a distance, and it's like a roar almost like. And, you know, the closer you get, the more kind of defined it becomes. But
amazing.
Yeah. And it's just so the sound, the fact that it's hot, and then you see them, like you will see them. You'll see weird things too. Like there's so many bugs in the environment that you'll see animals out. You'll see raccoons, you know, hunting them and eating
them. No kidding.
You'll see snakes. You'll see turtles eating them.
Oh, wow. Everything. So it's just like a what do you call it? A Donnybrook or just
Donnybrook. I love that.
Yeah.
I actually use that in my book. That's so funny. It's a feast. It's, and like I said, the whole ecosystem is upside down. That's such a injection to the environment of food that like everything pays attention, and some things get full on it. Like they just don't want any more.
Including the trout.
Yeah, all kinds of fish.
Yeah.
All kinds of fish. Yeah. So you'll catch fish that are lumpy. Like you'll handle them and you'll be like, there's something that's full of cicadas. And you'll see some pictures in my book, and you'll actually see some dissected pictures in my book of fish with, you know, 30 cicadas that they ate
right.
And whatever. But
what does it, so if you're, first off, is this something where most of the shops, guys, if somebody wanted to do this, do most people, are they hitting this? Is this a focus, or do you think this is more like not everybody's into it?
You know, that is some of the, back to like long-windedly answering your question of why the book. You know, I've been chasing this around for many years, and every year, you know, we're anticipating something. My friends and I are, and there's a core group of us, and then, you know, a couple other buddies have their core group, but we're all kind of cicada crazy.
Yeah.
And we know about it, and we get ready for it. And we're like trying to tell people, like, you aren't going to believe this. Like, you won't believe this fishing. And I've seen some shops in the past sharing like misinformation and like telling folks like, hey, it's going to be here on this river. And I'm like, you're not even in the range for it. Like, you're not going to have it there. So it was a little bit the book is like educational in some ways, but then it's really interesting to hit, because I think a lot of people miss it. And I share an experience in the book, and I've had several of these experiences at times of going fishing and having just phenomenal fishing and catching tons of fish on these bugs while the bugs are screaming on the hillsides and everything. And then talking to other anglers and saying like, how are you doing? Like, how many did you catch? Or, you know, it's great, isn't it? And they're like, I've caught a couple.
Yeah.
They're like, wait, what are you fishing? And they're like, we're nymphing. And I'm like, whoa, back up. Like, you can always catch fish on nymphs, I know, but man, like, are you fishing cicadas? And I think a lot of people historically, they because they don't understand the bug, miss it. And they actually might even be out there fishing, but they actually miss it because it's not an aquatic insect. It's only in the water by accident. It's more like hopper fishing. So you're targeting a fish that is actually keyed on that bug and hunting it, which is going to be a little bit unpredictable. You know, it's not going to be like a trout sitting in its net, you know, normal holding lane, eating mayflies that are floating to it. they're keyed in on a bug hit the water somewhere because I felt it with my lateral line and I'm going to find it.
Wow. You're going for it. Well, so if you're on the water, let's just take it there. Let's say you're in that situation. It's May or whenever, and this thing's coming off and they're flying around. So describe that. How does somebody have success on the water?
Yeah. So the book, that's probably the most important part of the book is how to have success with this, because you, to have success with this, you got to understand the bug and you got to understand its life cycle of timing the emergence and timing where to be when it's going to happen, and being able to scout is kind of the whole theme of a lot of the book. Is if you know you're in an area that's going to have these bugs, you got to go look when the timing is getting towards when you think they're going to emerge. Now, they don't all emerge on June 8th, right? You got to go, you know, end of May, and you got to go and you look for signs. And, you know, when these bugs crawl out of the ground, they leave behind a big hole. So you look at for these holes at the bases of trees, and then you start looking for bugs, and then you listen and things. So once you understand this bug and how to find the bug near waterways, well, the fish don't immediately turn on to these bugs. Enough of these bugs have to accidentally end up in the water where the fish know they're there and know it's food and know that they're going to hunt for it and eat it. So to have success starts with, number one, understanding the bug and the life cycle. The second piece is, you know, figuring out what waterways are in that range of bugs and being able to either get lucky or anticipate or do the kind of scouting return trips to be able to say like, oh, it's starting. And, you know, the fish don't know they're there yet. The fish don't know they're there yet. And then coming back in 3 days later, 4 days later, and oh, wow, the whole lake or the river is boiling with fish eating cicadas. So that's very important. And like I go through in pretty deep detail, a lot of experiences of mine, of others, of other cicada crazed people, of like how they approach, how we approach scouting and targeting places to fish these periodical cicadas.
There you go. Okay. And so we got that. So part of it is, I kind of feel like it's almost like mushroom hunting kind of, right? You're out there just having fun, right? Exploring. And you're like, oh, looking under, here's some mushrooms, and you're finding these spots. So once you do your exploration, you find the cicadas, you know, they're going to be there now, you know, they're near enough to the water, your favorite fishery, whatever. Now you're ready. It's just a matter of key. How do you know when it happens? How do you know when that timing, that week, that day is going to go?
Yeah, it's again, yeah. So when you understand the bugs, and then, you know, seeing one bug doesn't mean anything other than, and this is a great thing with cicadas, you go to a waterway and you start looking at trees and you find one cicada, you've hit the jackpot. Because if you're right there on the water and you found one, just be patient. There are going to be a million more in the next week, days. You have to just keep going back.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So you're right. It's like mushroom hunting almost, right? So you find where, you know, a morale is and you're like, well, there's one, there's going to be more.
Yeah.
You just keep coming back.
Keep coming back.
After a rain, holy cow, look at them all. Like, same thing.
Right, right. Okay. And then so when you're out there again, now you're on it, it's starting to happen. Describe that. What are the flies? What's the technique? How do you hook up with the fish with these guys?
Yeah, absolutely. So my book has 59 patterns of different cicada patterns. Now, I will kind of, we've only really talked about the periodical event kind of stuff that's happening this year. But there are also annual cicadas, which happen every summer, everywhere. And most places have a few annual varieties and are very fishable. They're very fishable.
And they're just not, now what's the difference, the annuals, is that just, it's not as big as this thing where that happens every 221 years?
The key word is it's not synchronized. So you're exactly right. So annual, just like hoppers, right? You've heard of like hopper plagues. Yep. So some there's hoppers every year,
yep.
But some years there's more than others. And, you know, it's better this year than it was last year or something like that. So annuals, they happen every year with varying degrees of intensity. But they do happen, and they are very fishable. They are very fishable. I fish the summer cicadas. It's some of my favorite fishing every year. But yeah, we've talked about that. So patterns, you know, the book has annual patterns. It has periodical patterns, and then regional kind of patterns. What we see kind of east to west. So it's really fun because it's a big fly, and a big fly, heavy tippet, 6 or 7 weight is what I favor for most of it. It's pretty non-technical dry fly fishing, if you will. Some fish want a drag-free drift. Other fish will eat it while it's dragging away on them, like when you're picking up a cast, and you know, fish will smash it. So you know, having success on it is really being there when the bugs are there and the fish are keyed on it. The patterns, at least this summer for this periodical event stuff, you need size 4. That's a pretty big dry fly. You need size 4. Some are, you know, either direction, size 6, size 2. But you need really a size 4 strong hook, and you need orange and black.
Orange and black.
Yeah, black foam, orange thread, some orange legs, tie it almost like a hopper looking thing. There's so many. It's great. And that's like a part of the book that I enjoyed, but it's almost like, you know, you can never be done with fly patterns, because, you know, even just looking on Instagram today, you know, I'm seeing what people are tying in preparation, and like, oh, that's a cool looking pattern, or oh, yeah, that's innovative what they did there. So patterns are always evolving. And, you know, as fly tiers, we're always, you know, trying new things and new materials and all that. So, but the book has some very renowned patterns, very well-known patterns, a lot of my own, everything from, you know, cicada-looking foam patterns to deer hair bugs to wood balsa patterns, like bass bugs, uh-huh, and cork-bodied poppers. And then I make a cicada out of an old flip-flop too. So
there you go. So yeah. Roy, the pattern isn't critical. Roy, size, getting, it looks some sort of hopper, a chubby Chernobyl or something like that would probably work, just, or any hopper pattern would probably work fine.
Yeah, actually a chubby Chernobyl is, so George Daniel actually fishes a chubby Chernobyl quite often for cicadas, and I have a couple of his flies in the book, and one of his is his version of the Chernobyl.
Oh, there you go. Cool.
Suggestive. So Dave, like suggestive patterns, right? You know, you're getting the size right. You're getting the major coloration right. It's got wings, big, you know, transparent wings. So some flash, uh-huh, and, you know, it's got 6 legs. So, you know, a lot of my patterns only have 4 legs, but, you know, 6 legs would be it. And the cool thing about periodicals is right on the cover of my book, you'll see, but periodical cicadas, they have big red eyes. And so you'll see a lot of patterns with big red eyes that you probably don't need, but yeah, it looks cool.
Looks cool. And is it when you see them, or, you know, they're going crazy, are you just casting under trees next to the bank, kind of just letting it, doing nothing, twitching it, doing anything like that?
Yeah. So I go into fishing rivers and streams and lakes in the book, and, you know, and from, you know, wading and from watercraft, and, you know, depending on your waterway, you fish them all those different ways, but you're right. Like the bugs are in trees. So, they're doing their mating thing in trees. So the highest concentration of bugs are going to be in trees. So you need mature trees, and you'll find what the males do is they'll call, and that attracts females, and that actually attracts more male bugs. So they get these huge concentrations of bugs in parts of the forest. And if you're lucky enough to find it along the river where they're getting knocked down or the wind pushes them around, they're not great flyers. So they'll try to cross the river, and you'll watch them. They'll start real high. Yep. And then as they're getting across, they're losing elevation. They're losing elevation. And then they hit the water. Oh, and it's not like they're... It's just that they lost steam, and, you know, it's pretty unlucky for a cicada to hit the water, because it's a certain death.
It's done. Yeah. People love it. Are there, is it pretty much, you know, you name the species that all of them love it, or are there certain species that love cicadas more?
Yeah. So trout will eat the heck out of them. And there's, you know, there's a lot of trout water where this year's bugs are going to be happening. And, in the Midwest, and, you know, in the mountains of some of the southern states, trout will eat them. They don't seem, in my experience, to get full on cicadas. Like, you will catch trout that are literally lumpy with bugs and still eating bugs. Carp are probably my favorite target species, because they're giant, they're big, and they eat. They don't seem to get full. And I'm not a carp fisherman typically. I don't really target them when they're down, face down in the mud. And I know that's really challenging and stuff. And that's probably why I don't do it anymore. It's so hard. And they're really spooky and skittish and line shy. But when they're on cicadas, they're pretty easy. So your chance to catch very easy 30 pounders is pretty incredible. And nothing fights like them. So they eat with reckless abandon, which is so crazy too, David. It's, so if you think of a carp, it's a bottom feeder. It's designed for bottom feeding. Its eyes are, looking down. It's not really made for eating off the surface, but when there's cicadas, they find that food source. And when that light bulb moment goes off where there's bugs on the surface, they are crazy for it.
That is really cool. It's kind of like the the suckers or the whitefish or any of those fish that have kind of that mouth that's down,
Yeah,
where
down,
you can
yeah.
catch suckers occasionally on the surface, right? Even I mean,
Yeah.
yeah.
So all fish really turn into eating some cicadas. Smallmouth bass during periodical cicadas has been a bit of mixed reviews. And some of that, I think, and I go into theories on this in the book as well, but briefly, some of those are, they're just coming off a spawn when cicadas are periodical cicadas are emerging. So there's that weird period after spawn where they just haven't started again, or some are still spawning and they're not really interested. The other thing there is there's lots of juvenile crayfish at that time of year, and they actually just may be keyed on them.
Oh,
And
sure.
the other factor is they just might get sick of eating them.
Yeah.
They just might get full. And but they'll eat some. Largemouth will eat them. Weird fish will eat them. You'll find catfish that are swimming around under the surface just like looking for something, and they're looking for cicadas. So another kind of bottom feeding fish.
Yeah, they're all kind of into it.
Yeah.
So are there, I mean, the cicada itself, is it, we talked about it kind of, you're fishing it kind of like a hopper or something like that, but what is the bug? Is it a beetle? What's it most similar to?
Yeah, it's let's see. Its closest relatives are like leaf hoppers. Again, true bugs, bugs that have a beak that suck stuff from plants.
So that's a true, so that, and when I think true bug, I'm thinking of aquatic insects, like a true insect that has the complete metamorphosis, right? That cycle. That's not what you mean by true bug. There's a different definition you're talking about
Yeah,
here.
different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of our bugs, and I'm not a professional
Sure.
scientist by any means, but
Yeah.
born from eggs into nymphs,
Yep.
that life cycle. I mean, they're all insects and bugs, but yeah, I mean. They're let's see, they're related to beetles, aphids,
Okay.
ladybugs,
Yeah.
leaf hoppers, those kinds of things, which aren't there aren't I don't think there are periodical types of those bugs, but the cicadas evolved into its own. It's actually the biggest group of bugs. So cicadas worldwide are 3,000 plus species, and they're always kind of finding new odd ones somewhere.
No kidding.
So yeah, there's huge varieties of cicadas. They all kind of look the same, big kind of stout bodies, big bulging eyes, six legs, and two pairs of wings. So they have these big outer wings, which the outer wing vein of a cicada kind of carries that coloration. So when we talk about these periodicals, that outer wing vein is like bright orange. And then when we talk about some other cicadas, the annual varieties, they're green or they're blue and iridescent, whatever. But big wings, thick outer wing vein carrying the primary color of that bug. And then they have half wings underneath. So when you find them on the water, you'll see kind of sometimes their wings are splayed out and they have, big wings and two short wings.
Squalla fly fishing puts as much time, thought, and effort into designing fishing apparel as you put into finding fish. Founded in Bozeman, Montana, by a group of fly anglers who wanted better gear, Squalla builds functional, comfortable, and dependable fly fishing apparel. I've been loving the thermal 150 hoodie I've been wearing from Squalla, and to be honest, I haven't been able to take this thing off. It's super soft. It's perfect in the whether you got hot weather, cold days. This thing is an all-around great piece of gear. Combining advanced materials with fishing-focused, purpose-built design, Squalla waders, jackets, shirts, pants, and insulation are made for us. To help wet fly swing listeners, that's you, Squalla is offering a 10% discount on your next order. Just use wetflyswing10 at checkout right now to get 10% off your next order. That's Squalla, Skwala. Gear for us, the like-minded few serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously.
Imagine embarking on a journey to Alaska, that ultimate destination for adventure seekers. With Fishhound Expeditions, this dream can become your reality. Picture yourself amidst the wild Alaskan landscape, where the northern lights dance across the sky and you're reeling in some of the biggest rainbow trout you've ever seen. It's an experience that feels like a dream, but with Fishhound, it's an adventure waiting to happen. If Alaska is on your bucket list, Fishhound Expeditions is the key to unlocking that dream. Visit fishhoundexpeditions.com today and mention that you discovered them through this podcast. That's F-I-S-H-H-O-U-N-D, Expeditions. Don't just dream about Alaska, experience it with Fishhound.
Well, what else? Anything else you'd throw? Maybe a few kind of big tips. You talk about a lot about kind of doing your research, knowing where they're going to be. Any other big things to get somebody ready this year?
Yeah, I mean, you gotta hunt for it. So you have a huge opportunity ahead of you this year with, you know, 14, 17, 20 states, whatever it is, are going to have bugs somewhere. So if you're in the middle country and parts of the South, from Alabama into the Carolinas, parts of Virginia, up to Indiana, into Illinois, Arkansas, you are going to have opportunities to chase these around. And what's kind of cool about it, when it almost, these bugs, when they happen in the East, at least, when we're kind of done with our mayfly hatches. So it's like an extension of your dry fly season. It's like a great grand finale, if you will, to have billions of bugs available around. So the key is you got to go to it. You got to hunt it. If you don't find it in one place, go somewhere else. Go somewhere nearby. And that's also the other thing. If you understand the life cycle of these bugs and what I mentioned before, the males will sing and they'll attract everybody to a grove of trees or, you know, a section of the woods. And all those bugs, they will hear that and start to move that direction. And that's where they're going to mate. And that's where they're going to lay the eggs. So that's where the next generation is going to be born. So on a river, we've seen this happen where you come around a river bend and it's dead quiet and there's no bugs. And they might be on the other hillside away from the water. And then the river turns and you come through a rapid and you're like, holy cow, every bug in the world is right here right now. So you have to go and sample. You have to go find it. You got to hunt for it. Use your ears, use your eyes, and watch the water. Watch what animals are doing. Watch birds. Birds, you'll see crows in the treetops. You'll see robins, blackbirds, grackles, every kind of bird. You'll see them like doing weird things, like hopping from tree branch to tree branch. And you're like,
all right,
eating bugs.
Yeah.
So be observant is probably the biggest thing. And when you hear them, you can't miss it.
Yeah.
And it's really non-technical, right? Some big foam bugs. You don't want to fish it like a popper. You don't necessarily like pop it. Yeah. They don't. When a cicada hits the water, it's almost like they know they're dead.
Yeah.
They just lay there.
Sure.
Most of them lay there silently. Some of them will buzz around, but just let it be.
Yeah.
A fish is a pretty evolved creature with a lateral line. They know that a bug hit the water that they're keyed on from 20 feet away.
Yeah, they know it. This is cool. And what are your, you know, you talked about the 59 patterns. What would be a couple that you could maybe look up online that we could take a look at?
Yeah. So I'm obviously a huge fan of my own pattern.
Yeah.
My pattern is the 17-year itch cicada. If you look at my Instagram in the last month or whatever, I'm going to shows and things. So I'm selling a lot of these flies. You'll see that pattern. That there's a tutorial in the book, how to tie that pattern. And there's actually a video on YouTube. You can just search, you know, Dave's 17-year itch cicada, and you'll find a really short video of me tying it. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of that one. I'm also a big fan of the, I mentioned balsa wood flies or cork flies, the Chuck Craft Excalibur. Chuck Craft was a Virginia smallmouth bass fisherman who was hip to cicadas. He knew what he was talking about, and he knew what he was doing when he designed that fly. And that fly looks very simple. It's just a cork-bodied kind of bug, but it doesn't have like a flat face or a cupped face like a traditional bass popper. This is a bug that hits the water with some authority, and you want to fish it dead drift, and it lasts forever, and it floats just the way you want it in the film, just a little bit subsurface, but just in the film where fish will, you'll get a good hook set on, they eat it well. So I'm a big fan of those. I'm a big fan of my pattern. I'm a big fan of the wooden or cork bodied flies.
Perfect. And if we were coming up, let's just say we're calling you now saying, hey, we want to do this. What would you be telling us right now, like in your neck of the woods?
Yeah. So I'd say, well, number one, Dave, buy my book.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. And because it does have brood maps and tells you kind of generalized areas to go. And then it's on how to scout. Like there's a big section on how to scout for this thing. Where, what would I tell you? I would say there's a lot of online resources. Start looking around. You want to talk to people who were there before. Who were there in, you know, 2007 when there were bugs, and they may not even be fisher people that fish. Just look for reports, call people, call universities that have entomology departments that are in the range, because I can guarantee you two things. You call a university that has an entomology department that falls in the distribution of this year's cicadas, they're going to want to talk to you as number one. They love talking about their science to the public. And number two, they are preparing for it. They will be studying it. They will be targeting locations and, you know, tell them what you're up to. That's how I used to get all my information, is I would call universities. I would call, I called museums. My friend and I would search online. We would do all kinds of things to dig up any insight of, hey, I think there's going to be bugs close enough to this river. And then, you know, on a hunch, you know, you did. Yeah, you go and see, you go and, or you find people that are nearby and you ask them.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Cause everybody's going to have an opinion on cicadas, right? Cause everybody knows when it's happening. Is that pretty much, are they everywhere? Not only.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. No, where when you look at the distribution maps, you know, they'll be in areas. So big cities right now. So Chicago, if you go online today, and just type in cicadas 2024 in Google, Yahoo, whatever, you're going to see all the news articles that are already starting the hype.
Oh, okay.
Chicago's area is going to have tons of bugs, and it's going to, you know, people who don't know, whatever, the general public freaked out of this invasion and whatever.
Oh, right.
And then you'll see scientists that are all hyped about it, like, oh, I can't wait to study this. Atlanta area is going to have piles of bugs. Nashville area is going to have piles of bugs. So you can kind of start there if you're near those places. Parts of Alabama are going to be crazy. Arkansas, there's some pretty awesome trout rivers in Arkansas. But this is funny. There's a few shops and outfitters that I've been able to find who talk about it. And I don't think they're trying to keep it secret. I just don't think sometimes it falls outside of their normal guiding seasons. So they just don't do it. And it's so infrequently that they don't plan around it. And then there are a few, you know, shops around in areas that are aware bugs, and they do, you know, guide for it or have outfitter, you know, experiences around it and things like that.
Gotcha. This is cool. So it's going to be a good year, and people are going to, it's cicada madness, right? It's going to be, people are going to be losing it, going crazy. And the cool thing is for fly fishing, I mean, it's going to be a great year. What do you think, you know, we've talked a lot about changes in, you know, the environment, you know, and things like that, that have affected fish populations. Do you think there's a potential that changes in weather and climate change could affect these guys?
I think these bugs, how they've evolved, are a product of climate change and a product, not how we think of it today, but as I talked about, like how they evolved into 13-year and 17-year life cycles was through climate events is one theory, and changes in the world. But I will tell you this, in our modern kind of definition of climate change, I'm anticipating things happening earlier, for sure. Remember, I told you the trigger is, you know, it's got to be the year of emergence, and it's a soil temperature. I can tell you right where I sit, just the other day, I was outside in a t-shirt, 65 degrees. So it's getting warmer, and we don't have snow on the ground and things. So I'm anticipating things to be earlier, actually. And I'm excited because 2025 is another pretty big cicada year in central Pennsylvania. And I fished that one before, so I have my own records of where and when and what time and what day did it turn on and all that, and I'm anticipating like testing that and seeing Does it happen a week earlier or 2 weeks earlier? Is it right on time?
Right on time. Is the 25, so now we talked about the 24, so is the 25, mm-hmm. is that a similar deal where you have bugs that 17 and 13 years, same thing, or are we talking different?
No, it's a single 17-year brood, so XIV. So brood, 14 is going to happen in 2025. It's actually a not a very widely distributed brood, but it happens in all the right places.
Oh, I see. So basically, going back to these brood years, they're numbered with the Roman numerals. And essentially every year there's going to be some sort of, there's always the annual stuff. There's going to be some sort of this mm-hmm. periodic thing. But the thing about the magic this year is that it's going to be two things together, which makes it massive. And that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Anymore. Yeah, it's exactly it, David. It's the opportunity is a multi-state, huge geographic range of bugs. And yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, you'll probably, if you do that internet search of 2024 cicadas, you'll start to see those articles too of like, this is something that only occurs every 221 years. And, you know, nobody alive since or the next time will experience it twice. It's kind of like a Halley's Comet, right?
Yeah, right.
And it's just these two broods. But so most years you'll have periodical cicadas. There aren't any in 2026. But there's some in 2027. So most years you can go to where it's going to be occurring.
Yeah, perfect. Good. Well, let's change the tide a little bit here and talk about drift boats just for a second. I think that we'll use your book as a resource for sure to follow up on all that. But last time we talked down home boat work, so I love getting an update on that. So are you still getting boats, new boats are popping out there? What's your status there?
Yeah. So as you know, Down Home Boat Works, I started, several years ago, and it was really just me evolving the traditional framed wooden drift boats that occur where you are out in the Pacific Northwest. And I took a lot of those hull shapes and designs and modified them for the rivers that I have here in the East. You know, and one of those is the skiff type that's pretty popular today with all boat manufacturers, mm-hmm. right? The flat-ended boat, lots more room inside, lots of more floor, which makes it sit higher in the water and things like that. And I've been a big, big fan of the skiff. I have not designed any new ones since we last talked. Mm-hmm. Don't really have a driving need for that. But yeah, still selling plans worldwide. Uh-huh. I get emails all the time from people sending me photos of what they built, and it's always cool to follow up on. But
that's awesome.
Wood drift boat building is alive and well for sure.
Yeah, it is. No, it's cool. We'll have a link to that so people can take a look, because I think that's one of the things. Your boat plans is what's cool. Like if somebody's listening now and they really wanted to have a cool project, they could buy your plans and literally build their own wood boat. Is that the case?
Yeah, you could buy the plans. And I have a tutorial as well, and lots of photos on how we do things. And you can build those hulls and outfit them the way you like. If you're a school or a nonprofit and you're interested to, you know, have a project or work with kids or whatever it is, just reach out. I'll give you those plans for free. And I have done that several times, and that's always like really satisfying to see is, you know, team projects or school projects where they built a boat.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
That's awesome. Nice. Yeah. And I love the boats. What I think that, we had a number of great people on, including one of the guys who wrote kind of the book on the history, but anybody else we're missing? I know you probably listened to some of those, but any big names you think we should have if we kicked up the boat season again?
Yeah, you're referring to my good buddy Roger Fletcher.
Yeah, Roger Fletcher, book, of course.
Drift Boats and River Dories, great friend of mine. I actually saw him on the Deschutes.
Oh, amazing.
We connect every time I'm out there or he's out in the East. But great guy. Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know if you talked to Jason Hayes.
Jason Hayes. I think, yeah, we actually did. Yeah, I think we did. He's got the boat in the what's the his brand? Hayes.
Jason, he's making his own wood boats.
Hayes boats. Custom wooden boats. Yeah, I think we did.
Hayes Custom wood boats. Yeah. He's making them for Helfrich now. He actually does some trips with Helfrich, and a great guy, makes the most beautiful boat, and his finish work is just, it's like Ferrari grade.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, his paint jobs and varnishing is just flawless. He's really good. So he's one, and I think you got them all. I was always listening and watching. I was like, oh, that's cool. I never heard of that guy before or whatever.
I think I talked to Jason and we didn't put it together, so he will be one I'll be working on to get that going.
You talked to Brad too, right, Dimmick?
Yeah,
Fretwater.
Yeah, Brad.
So that's great.
Yeah, Brad. That's right.
And they do. They're prolific with wood boats, right? You're always building those little Doriacs or Grand Canyon Dories, and really cool. Yeah, talk to Jason. I think and talk to Roger again maybe, because they have a lot of new events happening at their Mackenzie River Museum and like the resource center that they started, and Jason's doing schools there. He's doing like a building class and
there you things. Go. Yeah, awesome. Nice. Well, I think we could leave the boat conversation there, and a couple of kind of semi-random ones as we get out here. You mentioned show season. Do you have a favorite show out there? Are you like hitting everything this time of year?
Well, Dave, I'm kind of new to all this. It's only because of the book.
Oh, sure.
So yeah, the fly fishing show circuit, I'm doing some of those, and I have one of those in Lancaster, PA that's coming up.
Yep.
I'm actually tying at a local TU tomorrow and here in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And then we have a couple local events for other organizations that are going on. So doing that kind of thing, and lots of speaking things. So if you're interested for your club or shop or whatever, you know, you can get in touch with me, and
cool.
I'd be glad to share. You know, I have a presentation on cicadas that I share, and you know, tying the bugs, and you know, sharing kind of, you know, photos and things like that. So
that's awesome. Yeah, I think that's a cool,
yeah, it's good,
cool thing to take tour around. Now, was this your first book, or have you written some other books in the past?
Yeah, this is the first thing. I actually contributed a little bit to Roger's book, The Drift Boat and River Door, and that's how kind of we became friends through that process. But this is the first book, and it came about just we were in the middle of Brood X in 2021, and someone was like, "Man, you guys should just write a book," to my friends and I. And I was like, "Eh, I don't know, maybe."
Yeah.
And then it kind of became a nagging thought. And then I started to see like misinformation or like different things. And I thought, you know, I probably could write a book. So I actually I reached out to Stackpole Books, who published the book. They're great. And they publish the best fly fishing books out there, right? So if you look at who they have and whose books they have,
yeah,
it's really great. But yeah. I reached out to them and wrote them a submission, and was very quickly entered into a contract to write the book. So didn't have a book written, but had an outline and had an approach, and worked with Jay Nichols there to kind of guide it. And then I got it done, and it came out in October. It actually came out in October while I was on the Deschutes.
Oh, it did. It did. What was the, when it came out, or just the process up to it? What was that like? Was it a lot of, what did that feel like when it finally was published?
It's a very weird feeling, Dave. And you'll talk to a lot of first-time authors, and I think they feel the same way. You get this thing called imposter syndrome,
yep.
Which is like, you just don't feel like it's real, and you feel like, did I get it right? Did I upset somebody? Did I say something wrong?
Yeah.
You go through those.
That's right. Because in a book, that's interesting. Like what I do, this is interesting because audio, as we do this, you know, the crazy thing is that, you know, this is not live, right? So we're recording,
right.
Then we edit and clean it up. And that's the beauty of the podcast, is that you can clean it up. And then if something ever happens, this doesn't happen much, but I've had things happen where occasionally somebody said something and it was just whatever.
Yeah.
And we can edit that out, right, at a later point or even after the fact, once it publishes. You have a book.
Yeah.
Once it's out there, it's out there, right?
Once you have it on your bookshelf, it's forever. I unboxed it. I got the books, you know, like I got some of the books, like I got advanced copies or whatever. And I opened the box and I held it in my hands and I got this immediate, what have I done,
right.
feeling.
Right.
And, you know, it passes or comes and goes, but, it's a very strange thing, but I'm proud of it. I mean, when you go through it, you'll see that I have some contributing writers, and then I collected flies from everybody I could.
Oh, nice.
And mentioned and gave credit to everybody I could. I wanted this to be the collection, and, where give credit where credit's due, and you know, to the scientists and everybody who studied these bugs. I mean, that's where I learned from. I didn't study these bugs and dig them up in the ground, but making sure that, you know, that stuff was correct and cited and referenced and all that was probably like the biggest part of ensuring like you're making a good thing here, making a good product.
Yeah, that's it. Nice. Well, got one random one that's coming back. This is an oldie but a goodie. I had a person recently that said the question we used to ask about the vices, you know, like what vice do you use? And then what's your vice from a personal perspective? The one that keeps coming up for me is the tobacco usage from back in my old days. But do you have any, first of all, what's your vice? Do you have any vices now that you kind of have or things you've had to get rid of over time because maybe they're not the healthiest thing?
We're fishermen, right? We love gear.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's gear hoarding. Like that is like, and it's crazy because my kids are getting older and like off to college and I'm looking at this big house and whatever and going like, it's time to downsize. So I've been scaling down, all that stuff. So when it comes to that, like I would just say excess is a problem. We have way more than we need.
Yeah, exactly. Are you a guy like tons of rods, tons of reels? What's your one item that you really go crazy on?
Oh, Dave, so I have too many hobbies, man. Whether it's music or guitars and amplifiers or fishing gear. Yeah, I mean, I actually scaled back my fishing gear into like the things that I use them. I really started to look at the shelf and go, I haven't used that in a year or 2 years. It's time to eBay it.
Right.
And, you know, sell or whatever, but I'm not too... I'm kind of new to the spay thing. So that's been like sell a bunch of old single hand stuff you don't use and buy Misers and Berkeys and Hardys and and all that stuff. So, but yeah, I guess excess, man.
Yeah.
It's almost embarrassing at times, but I'm right in that ship. I'm starting to give things away and get out of, maybe I hoard boats too, though.
Right. The boats. Yeah. I've heard some of these people that have 20 boats in their thing and stuff, but yeah, I think I'm with you. I love the gear and stuff for sure, but I feel like my fly gear, especially as I've been doing these trips, instead of buying more stuff, I've been having fun just saying to whoever we're going with, hey, I'm not coming with anything. How about I will use one of your setups? You know, it's been kind of cool because every time I'm using a different thing and then I don't, you know. But so at the end of the day, I probably won't have as much gear as somebody else, but it really doesn't matter to me. I think more is like,
That's scary.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd want to use any of my buddies' setups.
Oh, really? There you go. Well, that's the challenge. That's it depends on the people. Well, when you're doing some of the people, I think we are able to get out with, you know, like I always go back to Jeff Liskey because his stuff's so dialed. Well, he's right next door to you too, right?
Yeah, I've actually seen him in Ohio. I fish in Ohio a lot.
Oh, you do?
Did you guys make a trip this year or you have one?
Yeah, we did. We did. We're actually, I think, going to take a year off this year because we're just doing so much. But I did kind of a hybrid. So we went up this year with Jeff for just a couple days and I went up to Rick Custich in New York.
Oh, cool. Yeah, New York.
Yeah. So it was a really fast. I wasn't really around that much. But
okay. I get up to Ohio quite a bit. So I work out of there and then my mom's up on Lake Erie and stuff. So I see her and visit and stuff. I was actually I was on the Chagrin a couple weeks ago. Really cold day. Wasn't sure if it was going to be worth it and whatever. And I only had an hour to kill and I swung one up. It was great.
Oh, nice. There it is. Yeah, so, I love that country. And PA is one of those places that I haven't spent much time really in. So I'm hoping that, you know, in the coming years we'll get something. But
well, you fish the best of it, I think. If you fish New York, I know where you've probably fished with Rick. And then if you fished Ohio, I know where Jeff's taking you. And you actually, I know you do, you like to swing a two-hander.
Yeah.
You're hitting the best of it. So Pennsylvania, there's a few opportunities to swing flies, but it's a whole lot of bobber watching on some of those creeks. They're quite a bit smaller. Yeah. And stuff, which is catch a ton of fish doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So. Awesome. Cool. Yeah. All right, Dave. Well, like we said, we're going to send everybody out to Down Home Boatworks on Instagram or check out your website. And this is exciting. By the time this episode goes live, I think we're going to be narrowing down on this big hatch. And any last words for somebody just thinking about this as we head out of here?
Yeah, get hyped up for it. You will start to see the news hyping it up. So when you do that, you know, take a look around in your area. You might be surprised, like alternative fish species, not just trout or whatever, that you might have the time of your life. So chase it.
Awesome. All right, Dave, thanks for your time. We'll be in touch.
Thanks, Dave. Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
There you go. If you get a chance, you can check in with Dave right now. That's downhomeboatworks.com. Let him know you've heard him on this podcast. And if you get a chance, please check in with our upcoming school events. You can go to wetflyswing.com/school. Find out what's new, what's happening. We've got some big trips going on that we haven't been to this year. And I'm hopeful
that although this year might not be our cicada year, maybe next year we'll get this one on the books. And you can check in with me anytime, dave@wetflyswing.com, if you have any questions or any feedback for this podcast. And I just want to let you know, I appreciate you for stopping by today. And I hope you have a great morning, a great afternoon, or great evening, wherever in the world you are. And I appreciate you for stopping in today.